What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care, so sit back, relax, and defocus.
Everybody, welcome to this week's edition of the Defocus Media Podcast. I'm here with my good friend Daryl Glover, as always, and we're talking about one of the topics we get asked a lot, how to start and make your own private practice successful. And one of those things, those essential kind of building blocks to building a practice, is getting referrals from outside sources. So we've got an expert here with us today. Welcome to the show, Dr. Jessica Teagan.
Well, thank you for having me.
Dr. Teagan, tell us a little bit about yourself and your practice, Madras Vision Source.
Well, I grew up in Redmond, Oregon, and my practice is just 30 minutes north of here in a little town called Madras. So when I finished optometry school in 2007 in Florida at Nova, I knew I wanted to return to Oregon, and I started practice with my father and his partner in Redmond and practiced with them for about 5 years as an associate. In the meantime, this optometrist in Madras was looking to retire and sell his practice, and it was a great opportunity for me. So in 2012, I took over that practice, and I'm married and I have two little boys. And we do all the outdoorsy things in Oregon, skiing and hiking and mountain biking, camping, and all that wonderful stuff. And I brought in an associate, Dr. Audrey Brumley, in 2013 when I had my first son, so that I could have a fill-in doctor when I was on maternity leave. And she's still with me, and it's been great.
So I want to circle back. You said you went to school at Nova. I mean, that's all the way on the other coast.
I did.
How did you end up on the East Coast from the West Coast? What was the whole mentality behind that?
Well, the biggest thing was I wanted to live somewhere where there were palm trees. And
that's a good reason.
I went to undergraduate at Oregon State. And where I live geographically is desert. So we live in the high desert of Oregon, and most of Oregon is desert. Where I went to Oregon State in the valley, it's, you know, very rainy, very green. And I didn't realize how much I disliked the rain until I went to school there. And Pacific University, as you know, is in Oregon, and it's also in the valley. And I thought that Fort Lauderdale just sounded a little more exotic and different. So, and I wanted to live somewhere different for a while because I figured I'd probably end up back in Oregon eventually.
Well, it looks like you didn't outrun the rain.
Right. Yeah. I was in 5 hurricanes while I was in school there. So it was interesting, but wonderful. I love Florida.
You mentioned kind of like building your practice, kind of a traditional approach, I would say, where there's an older established doctor in the community and you buy the practice from them. But how are you able to continue to change and reinvent that practice to meet today's patient care needs in your community?
Well, that's a good question. So when I took over this practice, they did not offer much for pediatric care. They didn't care to see kids that were 5 and under, and they didn't do as much medical eye care. So when I took over that practice, we definitely made it clear to patients that we were going to be seeing children and infants, as I'm an infancy provider. And we reached out to some of the ophthalmology clinics locally that this practice was co-managing with and let them know that we would be taking back over glaucoma care for those patients. And then the biggest thing was, in that small community, we reached out to the primary care provider offices and let them know that we were there and that we would do emergency eye care, that we would see their diabetics, and that we would take over their glaucoma care too. So, and just let them know that we do that. And we wrote good correspondence. With every patient we saw that was diabetic, we were sure to send a letter back to their primary care doctor to let them know about their eye health. And that was a good start.
So how did the dialogue come about with the primary care physicians? Was it just visiting their office? Did you email them? Did you call them? How did you even get that relationship started?
First, just the sending the letters based on patients, then starting to meet them in the community. What really inspired me was I went to a lecture that April Jasper had given, and she had reached out to primary care doctors in her community and just sent them a gift basket and said, thank you for sharing in the care of our patients. And whether or not she shared patients with those clinics, they started sending referrals to her. So I kind of took it a step further, and I scheduled luncheons with these practices. So the main clinic in town, which is Madras Medical Group, we shared a lot of patients with. Every day we were seeing their patients. So I scheduled a catered lunch at their clinic, so it was easy for them, invited all of their staff, nurses and providers, and took my staff so that they would have some friendly faces to see and know when they'd call over. I had a printout that kind of detailed what kind of medical care we offered. I had my cell phone number on it so they could call me after hours if they had a question, and we just kind of met face to face. And that was really big for us. So pretty soon we started getting calls every day, and they were sending patients over for various reasons, whether it was an emergency or just a question that they had. And we let them know that we're just always available to them if they have a question.
I think that's so key, is taking that time to do a personal touch, because yes, you can send a letter, but I know, I mean, how many pieces of mail do you get at your office every single day? And you're like, ah, oh, trash, trash, trash. Like, I don't have time to read a letter and really process and see the value in what I'm getting. But if a person comes in and establishes a relationship, that was time outside of patient care that you had to commit to doing that. But obviously with a huge return on investment.
Right. You know, it was so worth it. And we've since had another new clinic open up in town. And all of those providers live in the area, which is big because we have, it's a very small town and there's bigger towns a half hour away, an hour away that a lot of providers will come from to satellite practices, clinics. So with this new clinic opening, we reached out to them also and scheduled a luncheon. They had different requirements. So we had to do a presentation. And this time I had my associate with me. So we, just the two of us went and met with them. And it was so much fun. And they really appreciated our lunch that we provided. It was funny. We had like just a fancy salad bar from this local caterer and they walked in. They're like, oh, tri-tip. Oh, this and that. They were so impressed with the lunch. It was so funny. And then we offered to have them come back to our clinic at some point and do a wine tasting night. So they've been interested in that. And we're so far going to set that up sometime this winter.
So cute. Like the food quality really does leave an impression too about who you are.
Yes. Yeah. It was just a little bit more something different. We brought in sparkling water. And it was kind of fun.
Well, you guys are real fancy there. I like it.
We are fancy working.
You know, another really good one, nicely, Dr. Craig Miller put this in Envision Magazine a couple months ago, but he brings like a local craft brew six pack when he goes to get like an MD, let's meet the PCP with like a little note about his office, everything. I was like, if someone brought me beer, I'd be like, okay, I'm in.
Yes. And you have to know your audience because
me, all it takes is just some nice red wine and I'll give you the world.
Yeah, exactly. The clinic that we offered the wine tasting to, it was funny. We offered it to the other one too. We're like, we kind of had interest in doing a wine tasting and they're all like, no, we like the luncheon during the week. So I think it would be, if you didn't know the clinic very well and you didn't know the providers personally, it might be good to give them different options. And for busy clinics, doing a catered lunch is really easy to do for them. But for people who maybe, you know, the other clinic is a lot of young moms, so the opportunity to get away and just go have a glass of wine probably sounds really good to them, which I understand because I'm the same way.
So besides PCPs in your area, what other referral sources have you used to really build this pediatric branch of your practice?
We actually did some vision screenings at local preschools, and that did help bring in a lot of kids. And I have, screenings are kind of controversial, and I get that, and I've since stopped doing that because I feel like it gives parents a false sense of security. And we've built up such a good pediatric clinic that I no longer feel that's necessary. I think the community and the primary care doctors now are kind of on board with getting kids their eye exams. Another big thing was the previous owner of my practice had a really good relationship with the school nurses in the community. So I maintained that relationship and took them to lunch, and they were really on board with sending patients over, or kids over in their schools that they had concerns about. So that was also helpful.
Great. I mean, in the schools is such a positive place to be, especially when you're trying to focus on pediatric care, because teachers see so many of the vision-related eye problems, much more so than parents necessarily will, because they're physically seeing children copying from the board all day, going back and forth, you know, all the accommodative and convergence issues that we would find during the exam. Parents may not be seeing that because they don't see their kids interact that way.
Definitely.
So when we talk about referrals in the MD community, I mean, have you had any negative interactions where MDs weren't interested in working with you as an optometrist?
Maybe indirectly. I've had some issues sending patients for neurology consultations where a neurologist will then send that patient to an ophthalmology clinic in the area to get another evaluation. And that patient inevitably ends up seeing another optometrist who works at that clinic. And then that optometrist will call me and say, what's going on? And I'm like, we're just repeating the same stuff. And that's been, you know, that's challenging. And it's mostly challenging for the patient, unfortunately, because they have to be seen twice for the same thing. And it's unnecessary. So that's been one area. And then there's occasionally with the pediatrician office locally, there's been a little bit of trouble there with them kind of taking our word for what we've seen.
Now, in regards to taking your word for what has been seen, do you think it's more of just the way that the letter is conveyed? And speaking of letters, how do you write your letters? I mean, I've always pretty much printed out what comes out of my exam writer and edit it to my liking and then sent off to whoever it may be that I'm having some type of dialogue with. Mm-hmm. And the letters can be a little longer than I would like them to be. And I've also received some letters that were short and long. What's the ideal letter length that you should have in order to have the best patient care transfer?
Oh, that's a good question. I also use ExamWriter, and I will usually just add a little short paragraph at the top that just details what I've seen and what I recommend or what testing I'd like to have done. But with diabetics, we started using just a little template where we check off things. So it's a little more simple.
Okay.
But with ExamWriter, yeah, we use the usually.
I love that setup, that intro paragraph where it's like, this is what I saw. This is what I'm referring you for. They don't have to continue reading the rest of the exam, mm-hmm. but I do want, especially with the MD, for them to know, like, I did check their eye pressure. We did do a dilated exam. Like, you know, we did a thorough exam today. So if you want to check behind me, you can. But that first paragraph really saves them a lot of time.
Exactly. But then they do see the details if they wanted to look.
Yeah. Sometimes I wonder if they even read it, because sometimes I get calls and I'm like, hello, I've actually bolded everything that needed to be investigated.
Right.
Have you actually read the letter at all? So it's like, I don't know if I should just cut everything out and just get straight to the point or actually give them all those details. But normally I do all the bolding at the end of the letter. I'm going to start trying to change that and make it at the top of the letter, because I think that will make a significant impact.
Yeah.
I'm actually reading what I'm writing.
Yes. And if there's something that's more timely, I'll just send a phone call over and try to get in touch, and then also follow up with the letter. And that helps as well.
I think with pediatrics might be one of the hardest specialties to kind of break in to the MD community. I know that's the one that probably needs our most attention and our most help, because docs are on board like, oh, we've got a diabetic, they need an eye exam. But with children's vision, it's not, it's so much more challenging than just, oh, they're myope and they need glasses. Like, there's so many other conditions that would help with optometric care that can't be seen at their pediatric screening.
Yes. I
in practice with a doctor who does only vision therapy, she doesn't even see primary care patients anymore. And we run into this issue all the time where I'm recommending vision therapy for someone that has convergence excess or accommodative spasm. And then, you know, that comes right back with the pediatrician and like, well, the pediatrician said nothing's wrong with their eye. I was like, yeah, but they can see 20/20 on the chart. That doesn't mean nothing's wrong with their eyes. Like, they're skipping letters and lines when they read for a reason and getting horrible headaches for a reason. So it's just such a constant battle. But I'm hoping that as vision therapy, like, more studies are getting published, there's got to be a turn into with the positive awareness of it in the MD community. What's so frustrating to me is with that service, the MDs will send for like physical therapy or that sort of stuff for, you know, in-office student. But it's like that sort of service in the class, that's no different than what we're doing in vision therapy, only it's more targeted and it's a doctor doing it, that service. So I don't understand why it's like such a hard thing to kind of comprehend about what we're doing is helpful. But that's the biggest challenge I've seen. If people are wondering or listening to the show and they're like, how do I get these MD referrals for my vision therapy practice? You're facing an uphill battle, but keep working at it.
I think it's just a grassroots effort that needs to happen, that if providers can just go to pediatrician offices and just have a face-to-face or one-on-one. And I haven't yet done that because I don't do a lot of vision therapy, but I do refer out to a vision therapy doctor in my area. But I think if we can just communicate with them and with teachers, I think that's going to be helpful.
One thing I'm curious about, you said you refer to a vision therapist in your area. Is it an optometrist or an ophthalmologist?
An optometrist.
Great.
And her practice is an hour away from my practice.
That's one thing that Jen and I are very, very adamant about, is building referrals from fellow optometrists in our communities. Do you have any tips in regards to that?
I think getting involved in your local society and just becoming friends with other optometrists in your community. I feel like in my community of Central Oregon, I would say, I wouldn't just say the community I practice in, the small town I practice in, but the region of Central Oregon, we have a really good friendship between all the optometrists. And I think when we start thinking of these optometrists as colleagues and not competition, then that helps.
Kind of the turning tide, right? Even, what would you say, like 15 years ago, you would never dream of sending to another optometrist because that's just going to eat your patients, right? But now it is like we realize there's so many different niche opportunities. You don't have to specialize in everything to be everything for everybody. The network of collaboration within optometry that makes us successful.
And I think we're kind of lacking in some areas. We're lacking in low vision in Central Oregon. And if there was a low vision provider, I would definitely be sending over patients. But as far as glaucoma care, dry eye care, diabetic management, I think most optometrists in primary care should hopefully be doing all of that.
Well, how many people do you think like really do dry eye though? Even though that seems like a bread and butter thing, like we're all doing dry eye. But think about all the undiagnosed and untreated dry eye that's out there. It's probably the most overlooked condition that we see every single day. And it baffles me when I talk to doctors that are like, oh yeah, I never have written a prescription for Xiidra or Restasis. And they're like, well, what are you doing? You're just like giving them tears every year? I'm in patient care every day and I know it is hard. And the last thing you want to do is have a 15-minute conversation about dry eye that you've had 20 times already that day.
They're just collecting a check, Jen. That's it, and keeping it moving.
That's when it's like, okay, I don't want to do dry eye anymore. There's a dry eye specialist right down the street.
Well, we live in the high desert, so every patient we see has dry eye. So it's a conversation. I actually start that conversation with every patient when they come in. Regardless of why they're there, I say, are your eyes feeling dry today? Do your eyes ever feel sandy or gritty? Or do you have any complaints about the way your eyes feel? So we have that conversation at every examination, actually. But I think it's easy to do in the desert climate.
I'm glad you brought that up. It's good to know that you're a specialist when it comes to dry eyes, because I would like to know, what do you do with kids with dry eyes? What type of dialogue are you having with them in the exam room and with their parents as well?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, the kids, I don't think our kids have as much dry eye as the adults, but we do talk about it. A lot of it's allergy related here, and so we'll treat the allergies, and we do artificial tears, usually preservative free. We haven't had as many, you know, it's not usually as chronic of an issue with kids and that I see.
I know, Daryl, you probably saw it a lot here. Where we are, when Daryl practices in North Carolina, we have a lot of kids with pretty terrible dry eye.
Absolutely.
And what I've been trying to do is, you know, obviously it's an uphill battle, but saying you got to limit screen times to 20 minutes because it's usually a computer or iPad problem. And then so many of the kids in our community, because we do have bad seasonal allergies here, are on like a mixture of like Claritin and Benadryl and Sudafed. And it's like, okay, we gotta get off of all these really drying allergy medications. And I try to encourage, you know, a referral for some allergy testing, maybe getting allergy shot. But it's amazing how much they recover when they get off the allergy med.
Definitely.
I agree.
We've started to be more proactive about screen time in our clinic. So we designed a printout in our clinic that just for parents that details our recommendations for screen time and also for sun protection and how often their children should come in for an eye exam and when they should start coming in by 6 months of age. And that's been really helpful because it gives parents also just a little bit of backup when they tell their kid to put the phone away and say, you know, your eye doctor also said you need to be off your phone. So we're trying to help them out that way.
Yeah, anytime I tell the kids in front of their parents that they need to put the cell phone down and have less time on whatever social media or whatever platform that they're using, at the beginning they're my best friends, but by the end of the exam they pretty much hate me for the most part. But the parents, I'm like their new hero.
You gotta wait till the end of the exam, otherwise you won't get anything out of the kid after that.
Kids who want contacts too, I say, you know, when the parents kind of questioning, I say, well, my requirement is you have to be getting straight A's and you have to be helping out around the house and you have to be brushing your teeth without being told. And then usually the parent will be like shaking the head of the kid, like, it just gives them something to work for that year until they come back the next year. And the parents know when their kid's responsible enough for contact. So that gives them a little bit of a backup as well. So
yeah, I like, are you brushing your teeth without being told? Do you clean up your room? You know, like, It is related. If they don't have any personal hygiene, I don't want them in contact lenses either.
So what else are you doing to meet your patients' needs and expand your referral program?
We made a conscious effort to just fit dailies. And it was my New Year's resolution, actually, 2 years ago for my clinic. And I said, I'm going to offer dailies contacts to every patient or that has a prescription that would work for dailies. And that was really big for our clinic. And especially in a small town.
Dailies have you found to be a big practice builder?
Huge. And we've even had kids that don't wear contacts that come in for their contact lens fitting. And they say, I want to get dailies like my friend on the softball team wears. And you know, all their friends are wearing dailies. So that's kind of the thing now. And it's been great.
I noticed that tide turning this year, whereas like I usually have to present like I recommend daily disposables because we don't have to. And like the mom would be like, yeah, of course, that's what we're getting. And I was like, oh, good. Whew. Discussion over.
Yeah, it's an easy sell more for kids too, because it is healthier and they don't have to be as responsible for cleaning the lenses and storing them properly.
And all it takes is just one family member to get in the world of dailies. Then the entire family slowly jumps into that realm as well. So I love fitting patients with dailies.
Well, at the top of the show, you mentioned you're an infancy provider. Mm-hmm. Have you found that you're getting a lot of referrals for just participating in that program?
You know, actually, no, I don't feel that we are. I think mostly it's, you know, we get the parent in with an older kid and we see their younger kid and we say, you know, have we seen this kid for an eye exam also? And that's usually our biggest referral source is just the parents. So I don't think we've had a lot of success with infancy. On social media, I try to promote infancy and on our Facebook page a little bit. And I don't know that people are really receptive to it, but I don't know.
I've had kind of a similar idea. I signed up for infancy right when I first started practicing, so like 6 years ago. And unfortunately, I've never, ever had anybody like, I found you on the infancy website. Unfortunately, there's just that disconnect where parents don't know to look for a doctor about their infant's eyes. So they're not using that website. So it's a great program and I love participating in it, but it's taking a while to take off as far as people finding you from it.
I think it needs to change also because that program originally started as kind of a free eye exam for infants without insurance or without vision insurance. And now all kids are required to have vision insurance regardless since 2014. And so it's kind of negated that need, I think. I think it's just more of a public health issue where we need to just make that recommendation that kids get in.
Well, you ladies set us up for a great podcast next time. I guess we need to reach out to the infancy folks and tell them to get on the show. And let's talk about how we can improve their program. I mean, I think that'll be an amazing show to discuss. I wanted to circle back on social media. You mentioned that earlier. Outside of the infancy, how much is social media actually helping to get patients into your exam chair?
You know, probably more than we know. We don't really follow it that closely. We stopped doing advertising through decks and like the yellow pages and stuff. We just decided to really minimize that and focus more on doing local advertising. So sponsorship locally for like kids athletics. And this year we took the opportunity from that money we saved that we used to put into our Yellow Pages ad. We used it for sponsoring a local air show. And that was really fun. So we're trying just to do more of, you know, keep the money local and local support. And Facebook's a free, you know, kind of a free way to advertise. So we'll continue to use that. And we could probably be better at that in our clinic. But we're, you know, I now have a staff person who's a little more on the ball with that stuff. So that's been helpful. And she's trying to do more posts during the week.
I mean, that's great. Just having a community presence, I think, is always one of the chief ways of growing a local business, right? So you probably see from sponsoring that air show, a huge return on investment, much more than like having a Yellow Pages ad would have ever given you.
I hope so. And we've also been really involved with Chamber events. They have a coffee meeting every Friday morning. We've hosted that a couple times at our clinic. I've gotten involved in Rotary, and that's been really a great referral source also. And so I think if you're practicing in a small community, you have to be involved in the community some way, you know, whether it's in the schools or with a philanthropic organization.
Thank you so much for your time this morning. Would you mind sharing contact information or a way people could reach out if they have questions about the letters that you've been writing or ideas to get in touch with local primary care doctors or local school administrators to share their services?
Yeah, absolutely. My email is jess7979@aol.com. I've had that email since 1996 and I'm attached to it. So. It's a vintage email and it still works. It's my only email. And people can just look online for Madras Vision Source in Oregon. And that's a pretty easy way to get a hold of me as well. And they're welcome to call my clinic and speak to me there.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast and remember, we keep it 2020 around here, pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.